Welcome back to another episode of an Investor's Journey podcast. So we had obviously a little glitch before the episode, and it was recording. We didn't realize, but yeah, we're back in it. This is Tip Tuesday, as a coincidence, and we have for Tips for Our Pros, we have Adrian Zalazar. This guy has always surprised me ever since we started working with him. You need drive in this business. You need to be able to hustle. You need to be able to put in the work. And in that purpose that drives you without getting any compensation matters a ton, right? So you need to make sure that that's always there. And Adrian had it from day one, and he's gone on to do amazing things. So I'm very excited to be able to bring him on. So I want to welcome Mr. Adrian Zalazar.
What is up, guys?
Thanks for having me. You like the sound effects?
I've dreamed of this day since we started working together, bro.
Yeah, man. Good to have you on.
Heck yeah.
So
how many videos is this already on the podcast?
How many videos?
Yeah, how many have you done?
I don't know. Well over 100 already. Yeah. Consistency, man. That's what it is. So welcome to the podcast. Tell everybody a little bit about yourself. What is it that you focus on? What do you do in the real estate space? Who you are and how you got started and everything.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. So my name is Adrian Zalazar. I am 24 years old. I'm from McAllen, Texas, small town, South Texas. And graduated high school, 17, moved to San Antonio to start my, undergraduate at UTSA, and, ended up, backtrack a little bit. I found my passion early on, at a young age, loved playing like the little Lego games and creating my own spaces. So I figured out that real estate and construction and, design, architecture was kind of it's my calling, And, went to college, got my construction degree, loved the program, loved just kind of what that involves. But before I went to college, I was part of a multi-level marketing company, and that multi-level marketing company really allowed me to expand my mind and, develop my mindset and develop my, the skills needed, the mental skills needed in order to be successful in anything, right? So, fast forward a little bit, and company went out of business, and I started looking at other opportunities. And I was in San Antonio, didn't really know many people, but I saw an ad on Facebook that there was going to be a real estate seminar in San Antonio. Robert Kiyosaki, it was a rich dad, poor dad. I thought Robert Kiyosaki was actually going to be there because I knew who he was from the personal development, right, that I was doing. So, I went to the event, and all they were talking about was pre-foreclosures. Pre-foreclosures are rising, and, you can wholesale deals, and, if you partner with someone, you can learn the business. And I just kind of like felt really, inclined to that. And at the end, I remember at the end of the presentation, he asked in the room, everybody, who was, over 10 years in the business, who was five, and who was just a newbie. And some people over 10 years in the business raised their hand, and the guy said, go meet these people, like those who are barely getting started, go shake their hand, get a business card, see what kind of value you can provide. I did exactly that. And they introduced me to some RIAs. So I got involved in the real estate investor clubs in San Antonio, and that's where I met you, right? So, before you, I kind of was trying to mingle around and see who I could meet, right? And I think, you sent an email out saying you were helping with marketing. And I was like, I mean, that's perfect. Like, that's the foundation of, real estate, right? And so, I'm sure you remember this day clearly. We went to go eat and had coffees at, somewhere there at the Pearl. We were talking about it, and you were like, you saw my drive. You saw that I was kind of fired up. But I feel like you've already met, so many people before me, right, that were probably the same way. So, I was aware of that, but, I had something most people don't, and that's, dedication, right, and desire for success. And so you gave me a few things to do, started calling a few, owners, go to, some houses, get some leads, distressed properties. I mean, a week or two, I came back with a list of addresses for you, like, you know, phone numbers, leads, and you were just like, wow, man. Like, so, you know, and I think that's, you know, coming into the game what helped me, you know, being able to do that and become resourceful in finding these properties too. But, you know, it was definitely a good start. Was a good start to my career meeting you and providing value to you, right? I mean, you know, I wasn't expecting a check at all. And, you know, we went, I don't know how long, diving into our credit cards and diving into, you know, different avenues, right? And maximizing everything, all the card lines. And I even got some student loans to cover my, you know, personal expenses, you know, and there were grants and I'm still paying them back right now. But it's, you know, whatever it takes, right? Whatever it takes. And, you know, fast forward a little bit, we wholesaled, you know, so many deals. We were finding deals that most people couldn't find. And, you know, we were super aggressive, right? We started knocking on a bunch of doors, making a bunch of cold calls. And, you know, that helped us get a little bit of cash going, right? And it helped us, you know, build a little bit of reserves. And then, you know, we got into flipping, right? A couple, you know, 2-3 houses later. I decided kind of, you know, that's not really my vision, right? And, you know, absolutely nothing, you know, personal happened. It was just a you know, we were going this way and I was going to explore another avenue. And I felt that I knew enough, you know, and it was definitely, you know, something that you taught me and the team, John, I mean, everyone that you guys introduced me to, you know, it definitely helped me be able to take that leap and, you know, wholesaled a few houses after that and decided to retarget my marketing into multifamily deals. And so, you know, started sending some postcards out to small multifamily, 832 units.
I'll
go through the whole thing, bro.
you're going to tell your whole life story. Hold on one second. So bringing it back a little bit. What was that drive that you had? Cause I remember when you started working with us and we were giving you all the shit work because there was a lot of people that, you know, they always come in, they're fired up, they're hungry. And as soon as they realize that they got to actually do work and just calling yourself a real estate investor isn't enough, we see that, you know, they start falling off. And the reason we give the shit work is because we want to see your commitment, right? Because it does require commitment from us to be able to train you, to give you access to the resources, to pay for marketing, to do all that. So a lot of times we got burnt doing all that with people that just weren't going anywhere. So when we were doing that and we were, the one time I gotta admit, like when we sat down with John and we're like, all right, this kid is serious, is I think we gave you like 800 or 1,000 envelopes of stuff with letters and shit. And you came back like almost the same day and you're like, hey, I'm done.
Yeah. Like,
holy crap. Like, what's next?
I remember too, like walking into your office and you know, you guys just, we're like, I mean, what do we tell this guy to do? Yeah. And I remember, you know, John looked around the room and saw the box, you know, of unlicked, you know, envelopes and unpuffed, you know, stuffed envelopes. And he was like, dude, take this box and, you know, go help us fill this up. And I was like, dude, on it.
Going through your mind during that time that, you know, it was all this, you know, essentially shitty work, but you still kept going through it. Like, what was going through your mind? Why did you keep doing that?
I believed that I could do it. I believe, like, after seeing, you know, everyone go up and, you know, speak at these RIAs and meeting people at these RIAs, I believe that I could do it. And when someone believes in something that firm, like, it doesn't, you'll figure it out. You'll figure it out and you will, you know, continue to drive yourself and self-motivate yourself. So, I mean, it was one of those two that I knew that I had to enter, you know, the game. I didn't have $100,000 to lend you guys to teach me, right? I didn't have, you know, an 800 credit score to, you know, sign on deals, right? I didn't have that, but I had, you know, ambition and drive. And, you know, when you, that's all you have, sometimes the sweat equity is really what is going to help you in the long run and help pay for your success in the business.
And what was one of the biggest challenges you faced when you first started? Like that you're like, damn, it was just hard to get beyond this point.
Mainly, you know, I wanted more deals and I think also, you know, the systems, like knowing that, you know, in order for me to close on, let's say 30 wholesale deals a month, I couldn't be going myself to go get the contracts on these deals. You know, I had to be flying around town, you know, like I remember too, you know, you were telling me just to go take pictures of houses, like just to go, hey, like, so you could be in the office and then I was going to go and learn, you know, build rapport. So, you know, I think the main thing was, you know, knowing that I wanted more, but how I was going to do it. And, you know, knowing that I need a team and we needed to build a team.
Right.
So,
all right.
And we're all done.
So then, so, you know, we did what we did, right? We, you helped us a lot in the growth of the company and everything. And then, like we said, you know, you realized that single family just wasn't really doing it for you. And so you branched off, you decided to go into multifamily. What was it about multifamily that just caught your attention that you're like, you know, let me try this out. What was it about it?
To be completely honest with you, the thing that really, you know, made my mind shift and made me decide to go full on, you know, is, I'm not going to say any names, but someone I know wholesaled an apartment complex in San Antonio and got more of a $235,000 check. And payable to him. And I saw the check, I saw the deal, I saw it go down, I saw how much time was invested, I saw that, you know, they were also starting. And you know, it was pretty intense. And the, what made me realize, like on the drive back home, we were at a bar, like drinking a few beers, talking, and that was when he showed me the check. The whole drive home, it completely changed, you know, everything I was thinking about. Like it was a paradigm shift for me in my head, because, you know, not saying there's absolutely anything wrong with single family. There's nothing wrong with land investing. There's nothing wrong with mobile home parks. I think real estate is a juggernaut, and you have to figure out what you really like to do and where your goals are, like, you know, figure out your goals and what strategy is going to help you reach your goals, you know? And, you know, that's when I saw multifamily, the ability to help, you know, create cash flow and create legacy and create, you know, the tax advantage that you need, you know, coming in. And really the idea of, you know, going into an apartment community and repositioning it to make it better and make it a more safer place to live, you know, and improve the lives of the residents and improve the lives also of our investors who invest with us, you know, and it's just a win-win for everybody. So decided to go full on.
So pretty much, I mean, which is cool, but money got you into it. Like you saw that big ass paycheck and you're like, I want me a piece of that. And that's, you know, that's always fine. A lot of people, I think that's a lot of the issue in this business when they try to kid themselves saying, oh, it's not about the money. It's not about the money, but it is, right? So we all need money. We all need to live. We all need to pay our bills. And you got to be honest with yourself, because if it is about the money and you're trying to pretend like it's not, all you're doing is just fighting against the trends, right? You're just going uphill at all times. Just admit that it's about the money and start working for the money. You know, start figuring out how you're going to get that. So you got started. What kind of education?
Let me touch on that though, because it really wasn't the money. It was more on, you know, because I saw it, let's just say six-figure check, right? But it's beyond them. At one point, you know, coming into real estate, I did have a few years where it was like the money. But then after that, when I became, you know, one with my vision and aligned with where I want to go, it was more of what that $200,000 check could do, right? So, you know, I could hop on a plane and go to, you know, Belize or go to Indonesia, you know, and not have that constraint of, dude, a $600 plane ticket, you know, or, you know, not even that, but while I'm there, enjoy it to the full time. I mean, I want to be going to Olympics, you know, games, World Cups, like, you know, that's all where what I saw that is the ability, you know, to really fire me up. It wasn't so much the $200,000 check, you know, because, you know, even my partner now, we don't care about the money. It's more of, you know, what it's able to provide. It's freedom coupons, right? I mean, that's the way I see it.
I gotcha. So it's a lifestyle that I can provide.
Absolutely.
So what was the education that you did when you first started in multifamily? Like, what was it? Because you didn't know much about multifamily. So how did you even get started? Like, what did you read a book? Did you go to a course? Like, what was it that got you in there?
So, you know, definitely helped that my business partner, Mauricio Ramos, he told me that he was going to go off and branch off to apartments and he was going to start marketing to them. And I was like, dude, you know, go do your multifamily thing. I'm going to stick to my houses. I'm going to flip houses and that's going to be me. And when I started seeing him, you know, just literally switch up his marketing from marketing to, you know, single family homes. He sent postcards to small multifamily and, you know, started answering calls and, you know, screening it out. You know, the questions you have to ask are a little bit different, you know, than the single family stuff. So you have to really, I mean, it's based upon the value of the property. So you have to figure out the value of the property, right? And, you know, that was quick, right? You just look at income and expense statements and, you know, kind of figured out more or less what the profit was on the deal. And, you know, definitely also listened to a bunch of podcasts, went to the, you know, weekend seminar, apartment investing weekend seminar. I mean, I bought a spiral for that event and I almost filled it up. Like it was one that, you know, also touching on that, I didn't have a lot of money to buy an apartment course. I didn't have 30K to invest in, you know, in one of those programs, you know? So, you know, I had $150 to go to this weekend seminar. So I wanted to, you know, stretch those dollars out as much as I could.
What was the
and
seminar?
Implement. It was in Rat Race to Retirement, Brad Sumrock, in Dallas. It was a 2-day seminar. Literally, I mean, blew my mind, came back, started reading some more books. And, you know, it was more implementing. I like to implement stuff and then, you know, learn it as I go.
Right. And that seminar gave you, because, I mean, you always heard me talk a lot of shit about gurus and everything. Cause, yeah. I'm not a fan of them, but I am a huge fan of learning. You need to learn, right? So, and I did the same thing. I went to a ton of seminars when I got started, you know, and everything just to learn, learn that vocabulary, because that's what I try to tell people when, you know, when you're in real estate and they're like, oh, why don't you do commercial and this and that? And it's like, because every branch has a different language that you got to learn, right? You need to understand how to evaluate. And you went from single family to multifamily, and there's a lot of things that you can take with you. But like you said, the property needs to qualify. Now it's a different way of analysis and talking to the homeowner. It's a different education level for the homeowner too. You're not dealing with somebody that's just, you know, losing their home, right? So, I mean, that education is so crucial. So you went to that program. I'm sure you did some networking, got to meet some people.
Super.
What was that action step that you took right after that seminar?
I started, you know, calling owners. I mean, driving around a neighborhood and seeing, you know, some old dilapidated apartments in San Antonio when I was there, you know, even in McAllen. I also, you know, heard invest in your own backyard. I kept hearing invest in your own backyard, invest in your own backyard, like where you're familiar with, where you know people. And sure enough, you know, we own 57 units here in the Valley, and that's where I'm from, you know. And it was one of those things too that, you know, I knew how to find deals on houses. You know, we did not have a problem finding deals, and I just literally implemented the same strategies. I mean, it's there's no rocket science. You're not building a, you know, Falcon 9 SpaceX rocket. You gotta just, you know, switch it up a little bit and decide, you know what, I'm gonna mail to 8 to 32 units, you know, 500 postcards a week, and I'm gonna make, you know, a few calls to some brokers. I'm gonna make, you know, a few rounds around the neighborhoods, try to find some, you know, beat up apartments. And we decided to target that smaller multifamily range because we were wholesaling them. So we weren't buying them. It was easier to wholesale. It was kind of a gray area where, you know, mom and pop owners, and we had, you know, negotiation, you know, we had the ability to negotiate a little bit better compared to a bigger deal. And we started wholesaling the deals and, you know, got familiar with all the numbers too, without actually investing $100,000, you know.
Where'd you get the confidence to go after those deals and maybe not bigger ones, and knowing that you can negotiate them and then do something with them? Like, what did you have a buyer's list lined up, or what was going through your head that you just went at it? You know, did you have a plan in place for those properties? Like, what was the plan for when you started marketing?
I did not have a buyer's list for multifamily properties. Like, for multifamily properties, I didn't. I mean, it was, I knew, and from these weekend seminars, honestly, guys, like, these weekend seminars, if you go, like, literally pay $100, $150 bucks, listen, pay attention. They're basics. You know, you have to master the basics, right? And when, you know, when I heard the deal, you got to find the deal. When you find the deal, the money will come, you know, when it's truly a good deal, right? So my focus was not, you know, oh, I got to meet people with money. No, my focus was on the deal, because there's a guy up there telling me with 20 years of experience that when I find the deal, the money comes. So, you know, I then, you know, I started studying what's a deal, right? Like what is a deal? So that's where you start making sure, you know, because one thing that we truly live, you know, super deep on and tattooed it to our head when we're there at Prime is, you know, you're not going to lock in a deal without being able to close on it. You know, you don't just tie something up and then, oh, let me try it. I mean, you know, no, you have to be confident and make sure that it's going to work, because then you're going to waste everybody's time. It's just, and that's not the way you do it. And that's why wholesaling looks super bad right now. And a lot of people don't like it. It's because they're not doing it right. You know, and I think wholesaling is a great way to get into real estate. Anyone who comes to me, literally, no matter what age, no matter what, you know, they do, wholesaling will always be the first thing that I tell them to do. Like one or two, even one or two or three, just so you even know how the closing process goes, like, you know, and be able to do that. So, I mean, definitely helped.
All right. So definitely you kept networking, right? I mean, that's the biggest key to all of this. You got to keep networking, increasing your network. So you started pretty much implementing what we do for a single family. You drove for dollars, right? You drove neighborhoods or wherever the hell you drove in McAllen, and you were looking for houses that apartment units and stuff like that that look run down and everything. Then you would scrub them, find who the owner is, skip trace them, do all that good stuff.
To be completely honest with you, my first deal, my apartment deal, was an 8-unit that I wholesaled. And that I literally bought the list straight from ListSource. No joke. Bought the list from ListSource, sent it to those addresses, those mailing addresses. Like a lot of people overthink it sometimes. Like I just sent them all out. I mean, you know, and some came back and some didn't. And that's how I started building my, you know, database and CRM, right? And all the leads, right? And so, that's kind of how I found my 8-unit. And the other ways was just, you know, postcards and cold calling. Our 32-unit we recently bought, it was a cold call, you know, just simple pitch, right? Hi, you know, my name's Adrian, buy apartments and looking to expand our portfolio kind of thing. I mean, I have a bunch of different scripts. But it was a cold call and it was in Spanish too. I mean, the lady only spoke Spanish and I never saw the seller. I never, you know, like talked to him in person. So, you know, that was, I mean, there's no special on list. Like, it was what I'm trying to say. Like, there's no, I mean, just get a list and take it down one by one. And you know, if cards come back or calls don't go through, figure out why and try to get another software to, you know, see if it can pull another number for it and just keep going, you know, and then you're going to end up building a master list, right? Like a master list of everything. If you keep it organized and, you know, you can literally just go into different cities and figure out, you know, what kind of deal you want.
And what's your best way of contacting these lists? So you're creating lists whichever way makes sense, right? Because, I mean, what I would imagine with multifamily is this is not like single family. You don't have the volume that you have on single family, right? So multifamily, you can probably pull a lot of different lists because you're just not going to have the tens of thousands of properties that you're going to have with single. So you're creating all these lists, and then what's your favorite way of contacting these people? Is it just cold calling, or do you have other methods that you like to use?
That's my favorite way right now. That's my favorite way.
And you always testing out new scripts?
I mean, I need to. So I don't use scripts really. I just, you know, call myself because I'm confident and I know what I want and I know what I need and I know that you need to solve a problem. So, you know, it's more of that. And that's also, you know, one thing I just don't like is scripts. And that's why maybe I don't even have one. Like when someone comes up to me and tries to help cold call, and it's something too that I need to have a script. I need to make one, like for if I'm going to be training like a calling center or something. I mean, I need to have a few things, bullet points, right? Because they don't have the 7 years of experience, right? So, you know, definitely different scripts. You know, I just freestyle it. I laugh. You know, you know, ask them about them. You know, it's you have to know it's basics. If you literally watch a few Grant Cardone videos, I mean, you're fine. And implement them. People just don't implement them. Like, that's it. You don't like Cardone, right?
Are you fucking kidding me with Cardone? Come on.
I have his book right here.
Douchebag.
I get a little bit from everybody.
Nah, so. I feel you. I mean, even a broken clock is right. But
talk today.
No, you had a good point though. I agree with what you're saying. With definitely, you got to solve a problem, And that's where I think a lot of people screw up when they can't get deals and they can't do that because they're not focused on why is it that this person even wants to sell, right? There's a problem in there, you know, that they're looking for a solution. So if not, they wouldn't be selling. So what is that problem? And that's where I tell people, they always ask, especially for cold calling, right? What scripts do you use? Nothing. I don't use any scripts because I want to know what it is that they need, right? And you can't figure that out with a script.
Yeah, you're gonna have to build a 400 page binder, you know, like
exactly. You gotta understand you're dealing with a human being and you gotta just go through it. Like, what are your problems? What is it that you need? How can I help you? So that's really good though. So you got going, you do your cold calling, you do everything. How many deals have you done so far between wholesales and everything?
So in the single family space, over like 50, I mean, you know, 50, 60 deals that we've done there. You know, did a few after, you know, what we left with you guys. So, you know, strictly homes, I helped on some of those flips with you guys too, two, three houses. That's, you know, before I left.
Marion is still asking about you.
Dude, that house that, you know, I was just talking about it with my contractor the other day too. That house with the 67 piers that you put in the house or something, dude, I was just, that's crazy, man. But it was great experience. It was great experience.
Tell that story real quick of how I was dealing with Marion.
Oh man. Yeah. I moved her out of her house. And you know, it was also, I think, a time where we didn't have as many deals in the pipeline, I think, than we usually did, or that was maybe the only one we were working right, like at the moment lively. So it was like, dude, you, Adrian, whatever you need to do, it's in a great location. You need to get her out. Like, get her out. Like, and she was budging on like 2,000, I think, or like 3,000. And we were like, no, like we can't. And I had to go over there and hear her sob stories. And, you know, honestly, it was like a hoarder house in there, like super sketchy place. She pulled a gun on me, like, you know, super mentally crazy. But I had an end game in mind, right? We needed to do this deal. So, I mean, dude, like I just needed her go like for a little bit. And I called every moving company. Come get over here. Like, we're packing boxes. Oh no, we hired Craigslist guys. We hired Craigslist guys per day to come help with boxing. Sketchy guys too. It was weird. But dude, I mean, that was an intense deal. Like, but you know, how much did we make? We didn't even make any much on it. You know,
it was a bad deal.
What I learned from it though, and what we learned from it, and that's where people, you know, drive me crazy. Like they drive me crazy because they care so much about the check and they say, you know, well, where's my part? What's my portion? What's my percentage? And what's my dude? Like, I don't know. That's not what you need to focus on, right? We were focused on doing this deal. So,
well, and that's why there's so many people right now that are, if they're not already out of business, you know, they're about to go out of business. And some people are out of business. They just don't know it yet. Because all they've been doing is just chasing that paycheck and the market's shifting and they don't know how to adapt. So going into that, how has this crisis affected you guys? Let's say with the current properties that you own first, how has it affected you with the 57 doors that you have? Yeah. What has this, have you seen any decline in rents? What is it that has happened for you guys?
It's not so much a decline in rent. It's payment plans, you know, payment plans, you know, and that's where it affects, because, you know, if we're used to getting their money on the third, the full amount, you know, we have to wait till the 15th to get the other half, you know, or so it's just a little bit of a different, you know, paper, I guess, look. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're still super interactive with everybody. We're communicating with everybody. We're providing resources for them, you know, on stimulus. And we operate our own, you know, management. So we provide, you know, we fired like two or three different companies and we decided to take it in-house. So I'm kind of the one, me, my partner, and, you know, a few other people who help us communicate with all the residents. We make sure that we respond to all their messages. You know, they're aware of the, you know, process of getting your stimulus check. You know, we send them, you know, some PDFs on, you know, some links and stuff where they can make sure they're get it, track it. Set up the direct deposit, and then, you know, even just also, like, I mean, that's another thing too with this virus that's super random, but, you know, nobody could find toilet paper, right? So they were using napkins to flush, and they were clogging drains. So it's funny, dude. It's funny, but it's just something that it was like weird, right? And so, you know, that's definitely something happening. But, you know, other than that, I mean, there's one or two tenants out of 57 that, you know, have left, decided to leave, and thank God, you know, because there's a bunch of ways for them to kind of stay in there right now. And I mean, we're literally going to lose 3,000-4,000, and the guy just moved out today because the court date isn't until July or something. So, you know, it's just, I think the big thing, you know, where property management goes wrong is remember that you're a people's person. Like, you have to be a people's person. You have to talk to them. They're humans. You know, they go through things. Just because you're doing well in life doesn't mean that someone else is, right? So just hear them out. And I promise, like, management will be a fly through.
Yeah. So did
and,
you?
And I mean, other than that, nothing really, bro. We're like 96% occupied right now.
Oh, very good.
Yeah. I mean, our leasing is on point. You know, we make sure that we are aware of when someone's leaving. Hey, let's start marketing this unit. I already have marketing pictures. Push it, specials, get someone in the minute they move out. Like, if, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. Of course, we paint it and we clean it and stuff. But, you know, the quicker the turnaround, also, the more we save, especially during something like this.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it makes a lot of sense. And then that's really good because it sucks that you guys had to fire the property management companies and everything, but I mean, we've had to do it too with our own properties, and we manage our own properties now because it's just, you know, nobody's going to care for the property as much as you're going to care for it, right?
Number one.
Yeah. And it's all in the margins, like especially profit and everything. Like a property management company, you know, they're clogging up the toilet. They're going to Google the most expensive plumber out there and go over there and, you know, destroy your cash flow for months probably.
No, I mean, and to touch on that even like a little bit is I would go to sleep when we would have, I mean, there was like a point where we had like 6 or 7 vacant units, you know, and to me that's a lot. And we didn't even have the 9 units. So it was 6 units vacant out of like 40 some, you know, like, and so, I mean, it still goes up and, you know, I'm committed also, you know, I've committed my life to help investors generate above average returns. So if there's 6 vacant units, I did the math per day, how much we're losing, I can't sleep. Like, I can't sleep, right? So these property management companies, I mean, it's just, I mean, there's some really good ones out there. I'm not talking for everybody, but, you know, it's just from what I experienced, they could probably sleep very well. I wanted an update in the morning, like 8 o'clock, dude, how many appointments? What's the deal? Like, you know, and they would also tell us too, some of them, you know, that we were trying to get rent of $800 on a renovated unit, granite, new fixtures, everything. And they were like, no, you can't. Like, they were like against us. It's like, dude, you got to be on our side, bro. Like, yeah. And it's just, I don't know, man. You know, I'm going on rants here, but you know, it's experience. It's experience. You know, it's something that, you know, you have to go through to learn it, to know what to do.
That's precisely what I was about to say is that a lot of people always ask for us to, like, you know, teach them the ins and out of real estate. And it's like, look, you can pay the $30,000-$40,000 for these ridiculous, pointless guru programs, right? But one thing they're never going to teach you is experience. I mean, you just got to do it. And what you're saying, all the things that you're saying, can only be said by somebody that has the experience. You know, somebody that's never done it before is not going to have that same point of view that you have. So it matters greatly because those are the things that you learn. The way that we've modified the way we run our properties, and I'm sure you're doing the same thing. Even the way, do you even analyze properties differently now from when you first picked them up that you were wholesaling to now picking them up and keeping them? Are you looking at things like, you're like, wait, hold on, we were skipping these things.
Dude, far, huge, huge, huge. I mean, Mauricio will tell us the same thing, but it's now it's like, you know, you want to check plumbing lines, right?
Yep.
You know, that's something, I mean, we would have not known, right? Being into what we know now, plumbing lines, are they, you know, is there a good slope to them? Roofs, flat roofs, you know, chiller systems, like, you know, things like that. Water boilers, you know, do they have individual ones? Is there a central one? When's the last time you did a major repair on the big, if there's a central water heater, when's the last time you did a, you know, major repair on it? Why? What happened? You know, like, is it gas, electric? You know, those are different things. And you know, that's also my reason as to, you know, to follow up on what you said, is to wholesale a few deals first, and you know, get a little bit of cash and know the process and know what to look for, but also do your homework, you know, do your due diligence. There's so many podcasts out there that I've learned from that honestly, like, are worth over $1 million, like more than $1 million of what, you know, the value they provided. But, you know, just learn from it.
Which ones? Name off a few.
So Michael Blanks really started me off too. Michael Blanks, Financial Freedom Through Apartment Investing, you know, Joe Fairless's podcast, you know, the Old Capital podcast is, you know, super details on, you know, lending, very high level conversations. But, you know, thing is, if you like hear it enough, even if you don't even get it, like if you hear it enough, you're going to start getting it over time. Right. And so, you know, definitely whenever, and also whenever you get it, you can, you know, attract those multimillionaires to be able to have conversations with them, because, you know, you can't have a $100,000 a year conversation with a multimillionaire. Like it will make their head hurt. Like the energy, it's energy, bro. Like yeah. It's all vibrations. And so, you know, putting yourself in those podcasts, I mean, there's so many, man. Maybe I can provide, you know, 10 that I had listened to, and you can share it with your listeners or something.
Yeah, for sure. No, I'm a huge, like I said, I'm a huge fan of always learning. Every time I've met somebody, it doesn't matter how old they are, but when they feel that they know it all just because they've had success, I'm like, damn, this is the start of your decline, right? Like you can't have that mentality that you know it all. There's always more for you to learn. There's always different perspectives that you just never tried, and you can't close yourself off like that, you know? And I think that is something that, you know, we're going to be students till the day we die, right? You got to always be learning, because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, and get addicted to it, like it, you know, enjoy it. You know, you learned something new today. You know, humans are meant to grow, not to stay stagnant.
And that's right. How you get that motivation, right? You just get fired for sure. Up, you get excited because you just learned something new, or maybe they're talking about something that has nothing to do with it, but it triggers something else in your mind, and you're like, oh shit, I can do this to increase revenue. And I mean, yeah, blows your mind.
Yeah, you keep learning. And I mean, I think the ultimate goal is really to know what you want, right? Your why. And when you go through things, you know, if you're just stagnant, if you're not trying to grow, the why is going to be very blurry. You know, mm-hmm. If you take, you know, 5 steps forward, and then, you know, you're growing while you're moving forward and failing and growing and moving forward and failing, growing, moving forward, you know, your why is just going to become much more clear too. And that's the ultimate goal in life, I think, you know, yeah. You find out your purpose. And a lot of people don't know how to do it. But dude, I promise you'll do it if you take massive action on something, you know, whatever you like to wake up to in the morning. You don't like your job, leave, like save up a little bit of money for 3 months of, you know, of work. And if you want to be a hairstylist, you know, take off and take the leap of faith and hope that those 3 months get you by. If not, do what we did and start getting credit cards. I mean, whatever it takes, dude. Like, I don't know. I'm a big believer in that. Whatever it takes.
I mean, I always agreed with that sentiment that, you know, entrepreneurs jump out the plane and start building the parachute on the way down.
Huge. Yeah.
When this whole thing hit the fan, a lot of people started reaching out to us because they were panicking, right? They were worried, they were stressed out. And honestly, like, we didn't know. We still don't know what the answer is, right? Because it's like, I don't feel that economically it's hit rock bottom yet. And so I think we still have plenty to go before that happens. So we don't know what's going on. But one thing that we talk about with John all the time is that we know that we're willing to do whatever the hell needs to get done to make sure that we make it out. So what's going to come? I don't care. You understand? Like, we came from nothing. So it's like, I've already been down there. I'm not scared of that, right? You just got to keep going.
Yep. And right now, I mean, I think the biggest shift is, you know, the money, right? Money in the deal. So it used to be a lot of money, very little deals. Now there's going to be a lot of deals and little money. I mean, not so much little money, but you're going to have to work a little bit harder to get it. You know, and so, you know, that's all it is. That's all it is. And I'm fired up about it. Like, I love it because, you know, through history, you know, when has the most billionaires been created? Through recessions, you know, and why? There's a reason behind it. You know, why is the reason that there's going to be the biggest wealth transfer in probably history right now that's going on? You know, you have to get fired up. You have to, like, start increasing your circle and having people with money in your you know, in your cell phone and relationships. Right. It's going to be important. Like you said, I remember you saying, like, it's going to be about your brand. It's going to be about your brand. Like, people are going to invest in the brand whenever things go south, you know, because they know that you don't screw people over. You'll do whatever it takes. You have integrity, you have values, and you're going to stick to them, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a very, very valid point. And obviously I agree because we said it, but yeah, your credibility is everything. But one thing, while I do agree 100% that this is where the billionaires are usually made, and, you know, I mean, shit, billion doesn't seem to be like much anymore. So probably trillionaires moving next. What people miss on this is that they are not created just because of sheer luck. Like, these people, if you study them, right? If you study the Walmarts and the McDonald's and everything, they still had to put in a ton of work during this time to become that, you know, billion-dollar company. A lot of people think that all they got to do is just be fired up and they're going to get it. Like, no. Just being here is one thing. But taking this opportunity and putting in the work is what's going to get you there, right? So you still need to be willing and able to put in that work that you're going to need. Like, it's still not going to be easy. That's why the billionaires are made, because not many people can do it, you know, and the few that put in their work actually get there. So going back, so we covered marketing and all of that, and you did touch on money. So how are you guys funding the deals that you guys are keeping? What is your structure there?
So we're doing what's called a syndication, an apartment syndication. There's different, you know, regulations and exemptions that you can do to, you know, pull money together from, you know, either accredited investors, sophisticated investors, friends and family. There's different kind of ways to, you know, do a deal, a big deal. But, you know, it's definitely possible. And the bigger deal, the more money you're going to need to raise, right? And it's not really so much, I think, the more money you need to raise. You just need to meet higher net worth people. I mean, because they're going to be able to cover a lot. You know, that you don't need to, if you can find one investor to put $500,000 instead of, you know, 10 investors putting $50,000, it's better, right? But the thing is that right now, I think, is more, you know, we're being super transparent with the investors that we have right now. You know, we're doing everything we can to make sure that, you know, they're updated. They know what's going on. They know the rent rolls. Every month we send a monthly email on the updates on what's going on. And so, you know, they have friends, right? They have friends and they talk to people and they've introduced us to other people, right? And you know, we want to also have a track record whenever one investor comes in and says, hey, call whichever one of our investors, you know, tell them how we are, tell them how transparent we are. And I think that helps us, you know, get credibility in the market and establish, like, you know, an expert in the industry. Like, you know, we had the meetup. People came to the meetup. People who came to the meetup that we didn't know invested in our deal, you know. And so, I mean, it's doing more. It's cold calling, you know, people who maybe have bought. I was listening to a podcast the other day. People who are lending on, you know, let's just say single family properties and creating a note. You can see it's all public records. And, you know, maybe they've done it multiple times with 20 different houses. So this person has money. So cold call him, right? Skip trace him, cold call him. You know, different things that you could do. Even apartment owners already right now. You know, anybody. The thing is, anybody who has a sense of retirement, this is the way out. This is the way out. And I truly believe that. So it helps me, you know, sell it. And it helps me, you know, be able to attract it. The thing is, I think I'm still not doing enough. Of course, I'm never going to do enough, but it's just like massive action. I think that's where I need to be focusing on, because the deals are going to be coming. Brokers are already sending us deals. Like, it's not deals, because deal is a deal, right? They're sending us properties.
Yeah, you get leads. Explain the syndication process. So syndication, you're essentially bringing a group of people together, right, to fund the property. Are they silent partners with you? I mean, how's that? What is their role within the syndication?
So for sure, typically, you know, 95% of the time, most of our investors are silent, and they don't have kind of any say in the operations. You know, me and Mauricio take care of pretty much all the capital expenditures, all the renovations, you know, we manage it all. And so, you know, you can structure it many different ways, which is another reason why I like multifamily. You know, is in the general partnership, you can have several people in there who are active in the deal, you know, who either helped you find the deal, raise the money, you know, sign on the loan, you know, and you know, handle asset management too. So that's all kind of GP roles. And then LP roles are, you know, someone, a doctor, an attorney in oil and gas. Also, you know, our GPs still put money on the deal, by the way. So GPs still put money on the LP side. Just, you know, for to reap the rewards. I mean, I know we're buying a good deal. I want to be in that deal. You know, it's not one of those that, you know, we just hold it tight in our pocket. So, and then the LPs, the thing is, though, a lot of people, you know, say the LPs don't have any say in anything. And it's just like, I mean, that's kind of, that's negative, you know, that's negative. And one of our investors calls me and says, can we try like a gray scheme? I'm not going to be, no, you know, I'm going to be like, yeah, like, let's, you know, let's talk about it. And, you know, let's do the deal and provide your opinions. I'd love your feedback. So, you know, yeah, these LPs, I mean, but also the cool thing about it is that they get tax benefits. They get K-1s at the end of the year. So if they have a high income job somewhere, you know, they can offset it with the multifamily like investments that they have, and they own a portion of it. So they're entitled to that.
So, in case you guys haven't picked up on it yet, relationships is a big key to anything that you do in real estate, right? Single family, multifamily, finding deals, finding buyers. It's all about relationships. I mean, if there's a common thread with what Adrian's been saying this whole time is relationships. You don't just blow off your private money lenders because, you know, you're too good for this or their idea is stupid. Like, you still take the time to educate them, you know, show them, acknowledge their idea. Maybe they do have a good idea, right? Maybe that gray scheme did make sense. Maybe it didn't. They need to understand why. And all that does is it helps you create a better bond and trust with them, where it's like, you know, he wasn't an asshole to me. He took the time to explain, you know, or he heard me, and they feel more appreciated at the end of the day. Because, I mean, to them, they are risking their capital, right? It does matter.
You have to respect that. You have to respect that. And, you know, ask any one of them. They're all super happy. You know, the properties have completely turned around that we bought. You know, they're getting above average returns, you know, that you can't find really anywhere else with all the tax benefits. And you know, losses on their returns. You know, we did a cost segregation last year, mm-hmm. and, you know, they all got losses. They accelerated the depreciation on everything. And so, you know, they got losses. So people with a high income, you know, they got a loss of $30,000, $40,000 paper loss, and they got cash flow. So they didn't lose money. They got cash flow, but because of the tax laws and regulations, again, I'm not CPA, by the way, so I'm not giving anybody advice. Talk to your CPA, attorney, anybody. I don't like, just want to throw that out there, but yeah.
Do you want to explain real quick what cost segregation is?
Yeah. So the term, I mean, you know, it's, so when you buy a property, you know, you have AC units that are not brand new, right? They're not brand new, and you have fixtures that are not brand new and, you know, have age on them, and stoves and fridges, and they separate what's personal and real, I believe is what it is. And, you know, they accelerate the depreciation on whatever is older, right? And you get a cost segregation company to come in and do a study, and, you know, we provide pictures, and then they end up, you know, accelerating our depreciation, really is what it is, you know, because everything when you come into a property is not new. So it already has age. And, you know, it's one of the laws that came into effect. And having a good CPA who tells us about it and knows how to do it is super important.
Right.
And you can accelerate all that on year one. And that's
it's
cool.
I think it's over the first 5 years, right? When you accelerate the cost segregation. Yeah, very nice. Has any of your lenders wanted their money back out after the COVID hit?
No.
They're all like happy to go.
They're riding the train with us, man. We've created a culture, you know, and it's super transparent. And, you know, we're not here to do anything wrong. And, you know, they can come by the property and see. They can come whenever, you know. Hey, call me when you're in town. Like, you don't need to give me a heads up. I'm here already. So, I mean, I'd love to show you around.
Right.
But, you know, most of our investors are just, you know, don't call me. Like, dude, don't text me. Just send me your email. I want to see my check. And that's it. Like, and those are the people you got to find, you know, because you don't want people to be blowing up your phone all the time, especially if they're LPs, you know, which there's nothing wrong with, you know, that. I don't want to ever say that there's that window, you know, but it's just, you know, I'd prefer somebody who is just,
well, passive. I mean, it's something that lenders need to keep in mind. Like, if you're becoming too obnoxious and too pushy, you become one of those people that we just don't want to work with, right? Because, you know, you cause more work for us because of your own maybe insecurities or whatever it may be. And I see that a lot when you're taking in maybe like 50 grand from somebody that has 60 in savings, right? So you can't be, just because somebody's willing to offer you money doesn't mean that you should take that money. You want to make sure you're partnering with people that, you know, if they're putting in 50 grand, that's because they probably have a couple hundred thousand to put away, you know, put away that they can risk. Because if not, that person, I mean, they will break your balls more than anybody that, you know, we have an investor that lent us $1 million, rarely hear from them, right? Yep. And then we have investors that have lent us 60 grand and it's just nonstop. Yeah. It's like, you know, and it's understandable. Like I do get it. But at the same time, it's like you're saying, it's just not worth our time to be, you know, helping with your insecurities or whatever issues you're having. Like, I understand it sucks, but, you know, the next deal, we're not going to go to you, right? Absolutely. We're going to find those investors that are easier to work with.
I was, I know you don't like Grant, but I was on his multifamily show that he has like once a week. And he was cold calling, you know, most of his investors, just, you know, randomly cold calling them live. And, you know, I think he was just wanting to give him an update, you know, why he's not, you know, giving distributions, things like that. And there was a guy who was just obnoxious, man. He was like, no, I want my, you know, 10,000 back or 20,000. I don't know what it was, but he was just being super obnoxious on like live TV and stuff. And Grant, like, instantly was like, dude, anyone here in the office want his 10,000 or 20,000? Like, three people. Yeah, I'll take it. Grant was like, dude, I don't need your money. Like, stop telling me, you know, stop being obnoxious. And he was just being super like on him, I don't know. And Grant was just like, dude, I've lost it. Like, if you want to sell your share, someone will buy it right now. Do you want to sell it? Like, right. We're all live, like right there, you know? And so, I mean, it's, you got to be careful who you choose. It's a team, right? You're building a team whenever you're, I mean, in anything, renovating houses, flipping houses, you know, syndicating apartment deals, you're building a team and you want to make sure that you build the right team.
Yeah, I think you have your hand on the mic or something. We're getting like a muffled noise coming out.
All right.
Yeah.
Hand on there. Is it better?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Awesome. Cool.
No, I completely agree. So, all right. So that's your funding. Do you have an attorney draft up contracts for you guys, like general partnerships and all of that to clear? You have your own contracts. Every time you have a property, the attorney drafts up whatever the terms are for that?
So we haven't usually used an attorney for PSA. We've been using the templates, which is definitely something that I kind of want to change and implement after, you know, talking to a few people and telling me, no, use an attorney for everything, especially right now. So definitely recommend using an attorney for everything. PSAs, you know, PPMs, we have used attorneys before for our PPMs, private placement memorandums that, you know, that help you get through the SEC, you know, exemptions and stuff like that, where people like agree and understand what they're getting themselves into and stuff. And so, you know, definitely huge. You need an attorney. You need a budget like 15K, 20K for a legit, you know, SEC attorney. There's several also I can recommend if anybody has any questions, anything, anyone I work with, love to share with you guys.
So PJ asks 506B, 506C or both?
Right now I think B is the 35 like sophisticated investors, and then, you know, kind of an unlimited amount of accredited. So right now all of our, you know, syndications have been a B, but super open to doing a C one of these days. I mean, you know, for these larger deals, and, you know, also for that, whenever you're dealing with only accredited investors, you kind of tap into that network that we were talking about. Is, you know, that they know more, they know a little bit more than, and they, their level of risk is a little bit, you know, higher, right?
Well, and then one thing that's always great with accredited investors or investors that have the capital is that usually they have friends that have capital as well. Yep. You know, absolutely. So then they like it, they get their money back. So then they tell their friends, and now, you know, that makes it even easier for you as an investor, because you don't even have to sell them, because they're coming with that recommendation from their friend, right? That's already investing in you. So that's why, like,
those getting into multifamily really need to know what that means, like that legal side. I mean, you're playing in muddy water if you do not know what you're doing. And if, like, there's simple things on a B, on a 506B that, you know, you can post on social media and you're literally like going against the law. Like you're like, so you have to be, I mean, take this business serious, you know, like it's serious. Reg A is definitely a little bigger, you know, like a Grant Cardone, I keep saying it, but he, like him standing up in front of a crowd of, you know, 35,000 people pitching a deal. I mean, saying, you know, he's providing these returns. And, you know, I think that's more kind of whenever you're like trying to start a fund and stuff, you know, something bigger. But, you know, definitely 506B is, you know, the way to get in, and, you know, definitely C as well. But highly recommend an attorney and know what you're talking about and know what you're posting. Because I see so many people right now that are raising money for other people and getting a percentage of the GP, and that's super illegal. Like, but again, I'm not an attorney. You do your own homework.
Yeah. We're damn near close to an attorney, though. So we have another question from Chris Ramirez. She says, currently working on a fiveplex deal. Other than seller financing, what would you recommend for financing at this time?
So maybe if it depends, right? Depends, I think, on a few things. Is she going to be the only one? You know, is there somebody else involved? Is her credit pretty good? You know, does she have a strong net worth or something? Because I think banks are kind of getting a little bit more strict on who they lend to. But you know, another thing too, to follow up on that, is that's, you know, a big reason why you need to establish a relationship with a small local bank. That way you can go to this local bank and you know, have a relationship with them already and probably get the funding from it. It's, you know, good down payment. I mean, it's a small deal. So, I mean, you don't really need 10 investors, 5 investors. I mean, maybe you just need someone to help you with, you know, some renovation money and stuff. But I would talk to also a loan broker, someone who, you know, specializes in finding you the right loan products. There's plenty out there. They charge a fee, but you know, if they're saving you more money compared to the other one, it'll pay itself. But loan brokers, small banks, and that's pretty much it.
So building a relationship with a small bank, what does that mean? That you put your business account there, you deposit some money? What does building a relationship look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, it's a little bit more than that. Yeah, it's important, but I think it's also letting them know what you do, right? I mean, showing them your track record, your progress, even if you might even get an investor out of that. Like if you sitting with your banker telling her, you know, like this is what we do and stuff. I mean, they're going to know what you do. And then they're going to talk in the conference room with the other head honchos and they're like, do this, you know? So, I mean, it's a relationship. That's what it is. And, you know, yeah, it's a plus having operating accounts as well in there. You know, the banks that can tell you that we have our operating accounts at love us. I mean, it's, you know, we're circling, I mean, the income from all the rents and stuff and expenses. So, you know, it definitely helps and they'll like it. But, you know, just establish that relationship, I think it's important.
And is it important in multifamily like it is in single family? We always tell people don't quit your job because then you won't qualify for financing, you know, because they want that W-2 income for them to give you any type of traditional financing for your deals. Is for what you're saying right now with the banks and everything for multifamily, is it the same thing or does the property qualify more? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah. So now I've heard that, you know, you have to have a bigger reserve. So you have to on some, you know, I think the price point is 5 million. So under 5 million, you need to have 12 or 18 months of principal and interest payments in an account separate. You have to have, you know, insurance separate, taxes separate. So, I mean, that's easily times three of the amount of money you would have needed to raise, you know? So, I mean, definitely the standards of having liquid, strong liquid, you know, to a bank, to a big apartment deal is going to be super key because it's what's going to get you through the hard times. And so another thing, I mean, that's why I like multifamily is because, you know, I don't necessarily need to, you know, have a huge net worth. I mean, I don't need to have the great credit score. I mean, you can bring someone into a GP and have them sign off on your loan, right? And have them be a part of the team, you know. And I think, you know, the amount of resources there is to be able to do a deal are out there. You just got to find them and be resourceful.
But at that point, GP comes in and they sign off on that loan. They're essentially tying their credit, right? They're given like, they're a co-signer essentially on that deal.
Yep. And the other reason why I like multifamily is because the bigger deal you do, you get it, you tap into non-recourse debt. So that non-recourse debt, they take the property, not you. So you're, I mean, that's also why people say go bigger, you know, especially in apartment investing compared to your 12, 24. I mean, I have the small ones, so, you know, but I just took action. I wanted to learn it. So, you know, but the you have recourse debt and non-recourse debt. The recourse debt, they go after your personal assets. So the person signing off on the loan, guaranteeing the note, you know, gets, I mean, puts all his personal things on the line, his boat, his house, his car, right. You know, a non-recourse loan that they'll just, you know, they're lending on the income of the property. So they'll foreclose on you and get the property and chase the property and that's it. Bye bye. Right. So, that's, you know, I think what I love too is it's an income based business. So you raise your income, you know, your value over time increases. Right. So
very nice.
I don't know if you want me to go in that tangent, but
no. We can go into that, but before we move into that, so you have that funding, you have somebody coming in. What you're trying to do is you get your partners to fund enough to be able to get a loan from the bank. Is that what it is that you try to raise money for? So you can get enough money to say, okay, we have all the reserves, we have all this covered. Now the bank comes in and fills in the rest. Is that the plan?
So pretty much, I mean, no, we find out who is going to be the one, you know, guaranteeing the note, right? It's the KPs, the key principals, people who are going to have all the risk, right, pretty much. And so we decide on that. And of course, that has to be decided kind of prior. Like you kind of have to know, you know, what the deal is, what the team, what the GP team is going to look like, more or less, like I guess the most important ones. And then, you know, the loan broker comes in the deal, make sure we have a deal, we get under contract. And then, you know, we then send it to the loan broker to start shopping it around to find us a good loan, right? It's not always a bank either. It's some private institutions, private funding. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, lenders out there. That's why I recommend using a loan broker. But so, you know, we raise the down payment of the deal, typically 20-25%. You know, closing costs, due diligence costs, capital expenditures, any renovations that we're going to do for the first year. Typically, we raise for the first year, and then the other 2, 3, 4, 5 years before we sell, we just kind of tap it and build it into the cash flow. But you know, all that you got to raise, legal fees, you got to raise, all that part comes, you know, into it. But by then, we already have the loan. Like we already have the loan, and it's already kind of been one that we're pretty sure on. Now it's, you know, all the closing costs and everything that it takes to close the deal.
Nice. Where are you guys looking for properties now?
Texas, for sure. San Antonio, anything between Austin and San Antonio, all of San Antonio, you know, surrounding little cities in San Antonio, small college towns, you know, in Texas, McAllen, Edinburgh, you know, places where there's stability, because especially right now, you want to make sure there's people that, you know, there's jobs, right? Those, I guess, you know, they called it those retail, big, you know, Wendy's, Burger King, Starbucks, malls, you know, restaurants and stuff. So all over, I mean, you know, we'll look at anything.
And what do you look at when you're analyzing, let's say a property, somebody sends you a lead. Are you looking at, you know, the job market there? What's that going to all come in? Like, what's your analysis process with a property like that?
For sure. I mean, you know, to touch on that again, you know, it's, we know the markets already, right? We study the markets beforehand. That way, you know, we cut time on, do we pass this deal right now or do we not? Right. And so definitely the location is important, you know, super important to make sure that there's easy access, there's parking, you know, before we even look at financials, we look at the property, right? Is it falling off the, you know, one side of the brick coming, you know, across? Is there a chiller system? Things like that, flat roof, pitch roof. And, you know, we decide on that. And then we go into the numbers and see, you know, where's the value add opportunity? Where can we come in and make the biggest investment, or I guess the biggest return on investment on, you know, on the capital expenditures and the renovations, right? Is it, you know, the units, and we can raise $200 a door? Are they below market rent? Is there like no lighting? Is it the curb appeal, you know, kind of crappy, the paint falling off? Is there crappy cars, you know, the tenant mix kind of, you know, hang around there, you know, every other day before you buy something or get under contract, to see what you're dealing with, right? To get familiar with it. And then, of course, you got to look at the financials, of course, to see how it's producing and where you can cut costs, right? Some people are running properties at 60% expense ratios and it's just 70% expense ratios. Off the bat, you can bring it down, you know, off the bat. I mean, on average, it's 50%, right? And especially, I mean, if you control your own management, you can really control that. But it's more of, you know, it comes down to, you're buying a business. You're buying a business, you know, someone's not going to buy a business without seeing some upside, right? Or some potential in this business, right? That's pretty much apartment investing. We go into a place and look for opportunity and put a team together of people that are willing to, you know, reap the rewards of it and do one deal at a time.
Right. Is there a formula you guys follow? You know, like in single family, we have that famous 70% minus repairs formula. Is there a formula or something that you're like, you know, if it doesn't meet, maybe like you're saying the 50% of expenses ratio, like what is that formula that you're like, it needs to hit this point?
I do want to say it's not as important as you guys think it is. But you know, I think a lot of people, you know, like it when you say details, right? But whenever we send our LOIs, we put three or four different options together. Option number one is a cash offer. It's just, 75%, 80%, 70%, maybe even now we're going down our LOIs a little bit, but, you know, make the offer. Option number one is a cash offer. Option number two would be, you know, a little bit more of a attractive, like maybe an 80% of the value offer of, you know, the owner of finance, option number one. Option number two would be like maybe 90% of the value, but, you know, attractive terms for us. So, I mean, we structure different ways, but you always want to, you know, have a few different options. I think a lot of people say don't do that, but, you know, it just helps us and it's worked for us. And so that's kind of what we do. But, you know, you also have to make sure you're buying in the right market and know the cap rate, right? Know the market cap rate. You know, especially right now, someone getting in, you need to be calling brokers to figure out what properties are selling for, especially during these times, and your underwriting needs to be on point. But, you know, yeah, I think it all goes down to that, bro. I mean,
right. No, I like the answer because it's the same thing with real estate. When people say, you know, oh, 70% minus repairs or this, like, I don't care about the formulas, right? Like, I look at the deal. Does it make sense? What are the numbers, right? Like, I don't care if it's, you know, whatever the guru training is, like, I want to know, what does the deal look like and does it make sense? Do I want it?
Yep. Right. So, and especially, I mean, you know, I think the really good formula you have to understand and really figure out, I have it written everywhere. Cap rate equals NOI over value. Value equals NOI over the cap rate of the property, right? I'm looking at it right now, but those are really the most important formulas you really have to know, because that's how you value an apartment building. And you know, you have to just make sure you understand that equation. And even then, like every day that, you know, I'm running the properties, if I save 20 bucks here, you know, I'm thinking of this formula, right? 20 bucks saved over a course of, you know, times it by 12 on one unit, and the value drastically increases if you save 20 bucks somewhere, is what I'm trying to say. So that formula is super important.
So do you want to explain that formula a little bit slower?
So the cap rate is the market cap rate. You know, that typically goes anywhere between like 1% and 10%, to over 10 is, I mean, depends on the market too, right? San Antonio, I would say maybe like 5.5-6, maybe a little less or more now, but, you know, McAllen about 7, you know, Austin is, you know, 5-4, the lower the cap rate, the more expensive the deals are. So you just have to, that's your determining factor on figuring out what the value is, and not just for you, for your bank, for everybody else, right? And then the NOI is the net operating income. So that's, you know, all the income, the gross income, the rents, you know, what came in though, not your rent, because it's called economic, I guess, vacancy and physical occupancy and stuff like that. So, you know, what actually came in, any additional income, any laundry machines that you're getting extra, any carport parking, dog fees, anything like that. And then you go into expenses. So all your management fees, your repairs and maintenance, your utility bills, you know, all your expenses, and then you get your number, right? Your NOI, and that NOI is your profit on the building. And that's what you use to divide over the value, right? So you can have different ways of structuring it to figure out what you need to get to. So typically, you know, we send our offers at a 10 cap, you know, 8 cap, 12 cap. And if we want to know what that number is, this formula is super important. So right. The NOI is pretty much the fixed number, though.
All right. So pretty much what you want to determine is that NOI first, then what cap rate you want to target, and then you start plugging in to see what the value is of that property, what you're willing to pay for it, right?
Yeah, or vice versa. If someone tells you the value or what they're selling it at, and you know the NOI, and you know you can get the cap rate, right, to figure out if you're buying a good deal or not. So, you know, that formula is super important to understand.
How do you get the so pretty much to determine the NOI, you got to get the pro forma, right, about on the property?
No, not the pro forma.
So what do you got to get? So,
I mean, there I've seen some pro formas right now that are so juiced up, and I'm like, dude, yes. Have you operated some apartment buildings before? Like, do you even know what you're doing? You know, like, I mean, there's so many good brokers. Like, I'm not going to talk for everybody, but still, I mean, you can't go off of pro formas. You have to go on actuals. You have to get a T3, you know, trailing. T3 is a trailing 3 months. So the how the property's done for the past 3 months, you know, like actuals, like go through it and get the information. I mean, in the beginning too, you know, when I'm cold calling, especially, I don't go into like, dude, give me all your details. Like, give me all your stuff right now. Like, that's super uncomfortable. Like, that's, I know I'm not going to get there. I'm not going to win them like that. So ballpark, more or less. Ballpark. Again, you go into your LOI, you have due diligence, you get all the actual records, and you go through that. But you have to get the actuals. And T6s, T12s, rent rolls, actual rent rolls. I mean, it's all actuals. That's how you determine your NOI, not with a pro forma. No, big no. You will be buying bad deals.
Exactly. No, I wanted you to really cover that because I always hear a lot of people that are, you know, multifamily became like Airbnb, right? It was that sexy thing everybody wanted to jump into because they saw it as easy money. And everybody was just talking about the pro forma. And I'm like, you're literally hoping that they share everything with you. Legit on a pro forma, right? So, I mean, it's just, you know, it could be whatever the hell they want to put in there. You want to see the actual financials.
Yep.
So, so let's go through one of the negotiations real quick then. So you're talking to somebody and you get in the ballparks, right? So they give you all the ballpark number and you run your numbers. And then you tell them, like, look, this, you know, here's what my offer is going to be, but this is going to be contingent on me actually checking the T3. And making sure that it meets all, you know, all your numbers are accurate?
Yep. I mean, it's just like, if you're telling me this, I mean, based upon what you're telling me, I know I can pay this. So when it changes, I mean, dude, hey, backtrack. Whoa. Hey, I mean, I can't pay you that if the number that you told me is not this. I was, you know, I deliver on everything I say. So I don't like to, now that I've seen some numbers change, I'm not going to tell you that I can pay that anymore because, Mr. Seller, I'm a man of my word and I'm going to close on the deal, but the numbers got to change, right? So, I mean, I think that's important and that's super important, honestly. And tour the units. Go inside every single unit because they could say all the units are awesome. But, you know, recently we were looking at a deal in San Antonio a couple weeks ago and – you know, we were running our numbers and the seller said they were all rent ready. All the 8 vacant units out of the 40 units that there was were rent ready. And we go in there, they're gutted. I mean, that changes the amount of money I have to raise. And that's going to change everybody's return. So it's just, it's easy to screw it up. But, you know, there's so many resources out there that'll teach you this for free, like podcasts, YouTube videos. I mean, honestly, like, and you just have to do your research and dive in and you'll figure out the rest.
Yeah. And PJ had asked earlier that a podcast list would be great. So maybe after the episode is over, if you want to go on this post and just put like your podcast, YouTubes, you know, whoever it is that you like learning from and getting your information from, just to get these people prepared.
I highly recommend also like some mindset stuff. I know, you know, me and you are a big fan of mindset and I think that's bigger than real estate specific information, to be completely honest with you. I think that's the reason why it allowed me to even want to learn about real estate specific stuff is to continue growing your mind. There's a bunch of podcasts for that too, but you know, books, mental books, you know, personal development is key. Go to seminars. It's not just podcasts. It's more of, you know, a little bit of everything and continue to grow and become the, you know, person you want to be, right?
Well, I mean, that's really the key is what we always talk about when people are, you know, asking for the how-tos. The how-tos are all over the internet, right? I mean, it's not hard to find how to do anything. It's just that you need the right mindset to understand what information you're looking for, right? To understand the amount of due diligence and work and you know, drive that you got to get to teach yourself how to do all that. You know, I mean, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
Or you could always partner with Adrian, right?
Cut your learning curve. Absolutely. Absolutely. 100%. I mean, that's how you cut my learning curve, right? I mean, it's you leverage other people and you leverage information. But I mean, you know, when I was starting off, I would not have been able to go through all the crap that we went through, bro. Like those first 4 years of grinding. I mean, I remember me and you almost tearing each other's heads off. Like it was like, not ours, actually, the sellers, like some sellers, some contractors. So, I mean, but you have to really have that mindset developed to be able to go through all these objections that you're going to get and all these obstacles. And that's the reason for you to continue doing your personal development, your Jim Rohn, you know, Napoleon Hill, all those basics, they're all basics. And you have to continue to develop that mindset. That way you can push through the nose. And it's just a proven formula. It's a proven concept. There's no trying to make it up. It's laws. They work. And it's the universe.
I don't know if you know this person, but Tessa Martinez is saying a lot of golden nuggets here.
Hey, golden nuggets.
Yes. So, going back to kind of like what's going on in the market and everything, are you guys considering selling any of the properties you currently have? Have you looked into it? Like, what are you guys looking at as far as that goes?
So, I mean, you know, we definitely have a goal on, you know, whenever you're buying an apartment building, you have to come up with a business plan. And, you know, that business plan is pretty much going to dictate whenever the property is up for sale, right? We typically, you know, underwrite properties from 3 to 5 years to for an exit, either a refinance or a sale. And so, you know, but the thing is, that's our pro forma, right? When we come into the deal, we have a pro forma that we have goals that we need to meet, to, you know, essentially double everybody's money. And in 3 to 5 years, you know, that number, that NOI is where, you know, we plan on getting to then sell for a value that we're looking for, right? So if we are able to reach that goal of that NOI on year two, it's up for sale. You know, like if there's no emotional, it's a plan, you know, we stick to the plan. And, you know, the great thing is that we're going to be able to do all that in 1 year. Can you imagine, you know, all the investors that are going to be talking about us, like, you know, so it's it really just depends. But you know, we are pretty, we're pretty close on one, to go up for sale. And, you know, we're just not blasting it right now. It's just something, you know, kind of on the low because of what's going on. I mean, we're cash flowing, we're full. I mean, I have no motivation to sell at whatever, whatsoever. So, you know, there's definitely exits, and you have to know your exits, and you have to make sure that you know what you could sell for, because that's huge.
Yeah. And what does that look like when you're ready to sell? What do you do on your end? Like, I mean, obviously you guys haven't gone through it yet, right? But when you start preparing to sell, like, do you start putting your own pro forma together, or do you not even waste time on that? Where do you list it? Do you get a broker? Like, what's that process look like?
Yep. So, you know, definitely before we even get the broker involved, is we make sure we get aggressive on our, let's say, T3s and T6s, and we plan. I mean, this is all a plan. I mean, it has to be a plan, right? And so, you know, what we did January, February, March is we made sure everybody paid on time. We were aggressive. We were communicating, you know, very good, decreasing any like major expenses. You know, that way it looks good on paper also, right? And so also we got a professional photographer in, you know, we cleaned up the landscaping, built a dog park, the lighting, took night pictures, took day pictures, unit pictures, professional pictures. I mean, like to brand it, right? And to push it. And we put everyone on the, you know, standardized TAR leases, the legit leases. And you know, one thing that, you know, I've been a believer of is to leave a little bit of meat on the bone for the next buyer. So if you are able to have a few contracts that are 30 day, like, you know, month to month, they can come in and, you know, give them a notice and start, you know, a new renovation. They don't have to wait, because you have to legally abide by the tenant lease. So if they have a 12 month lease, you can't kick them out. And there's a few different ways to structure it, but if you want to cash for keys, things like that. But you know, put everyone on a standardized lease and leave some opportunity for the buyer to. I mean, we're not going to go in there and fully maximize the property. It's just, if we do that, no one's going to want to buy 100% value of the property. They're going to want to do their own work, right? Unless you are in Austin and you're buying downtown Austin and you're just a Chinese investor and want appreciation over time.
Damn, getting racist.
There's a lot of Chinese money getting dumped.
So all right. So you're looking. You like to buy them at around 10% cap rate. That's what you target, and then you want to sell what kind of cap rate? Do you have a target on that?
Again, it just depends, right? It depends. I mean, where? I mean, there's a lot of variables, but in San Antonio, we try to get the 6, right? I mean, I think 6.5. I mean, being aggressive, but something along those lines. But you need to know your cap rate, and that's what's going to help. But that's typically what happened.
All right. So, I mean, a lot of great information. I think people have gotten a ton of value. I mean, you really have shared everything. You've covered a lot. What has been the biggest challenge for you since you went ahead and decided to say, I'm in this real estate space, this is what I'm doing. What has been your biggest challenge? And did you overcome it, or are you still having this challenge?
I mean, there's challenges every day, mm-hmm. I think, that I face. I think one big one is, a team. I think having a team is super important. In order for me to do what I want to do, build what I want to build, I can't do it myself. And it needs more, especially if you're trying to build a company. It needs more than 1, 2, 3 people. I mean, you need a good amount of people that all share the same vision and all, are good at what they're good at, and they all help with everything, right? I mean, I think that's where I'm kind of like struggling a little bit, is to, establish this team and, 100% dedicated, people, and, systems too is also another thing. Organization is key too. I mean, I feel like I need to, definitely improve on my organizational skills. I'm just not as structured as I think I could be. And, I think that's the key for me being more effective, is being more structured. It's one of those things where we're constantly growing and figuring out some problems and trying to fix them, and it's not perfect. I can guarantee you, even Robert Kiyosaki has struggles and that he's working on, and, so don't be afraid of them, right? I mean, embrace them and run with it, and, reach out to people and see what they do, right? Get ideas and be curious.
Right.
I think that's key, but, definitely organizational structure. I love what I do. I love construction. I love renovation. I love real estate. I love talking to people, and that's what I like to do. So that's kind of what I like to focus on.
Nice. But, very good. So you guys, do Traction, right? It's a book that we've started, when you were working with us, we follow it as well. So in Traction, you set your year long goal, and then you set your rocks, which are your 90 day goals, right? We did reevaluate our year long goal when this coronavirus hit, right? We restructured what kind of marketing we were going to focus on. We're seeing a lot of things that are going to be coming up in the real estate space, especially with, like I said, a lot of these shitty wholesalers that are going to be going out of business. There's going to be a lot of opportunities coming up. So we reassessed what we were going to do for the year. What does that vision look like for your company? Like, what do you got? What's your goal?
I have it, man. I have it right in my face. I mean, we did the 90 day goals. We did the 1 year. I really want to touch on the 90 days, because that's, I mean, from the book, he says, don't really focus on the 1 year, do your 90s, right? Make that your biggest, energy that you're focusing on. So the 90 day goals: get 125 total units under contract, soft commitments of $2 million, finish remodel at one of our apartments, 100%, send 300 postcards a week, 10 cold calling man hours per week, close on one of the properties that we're selling, wholesale 2 more apartment complexes, start a podcast, hire 1 more employee for our management company, hire 1 more employee for acquisitions, and delegate, branding and social media. I think that's where our 90-day goals need to align. And, I love Traction. I love the fact that it's in your face, and you you use your mind to create this, and then you like really believe that it can be done, and it's there, and you have something to work towards. You know, that's what's going to help you get up in the mornings. And you know, traction is definitely a good. I mean, it helped when we were together. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, our meetings were starting to get like super crappy. Like everyone was, you know, eating and it's so. And then once we implemented a little bit of structure, like I said, I'm lacking a little bit, right? That's where things really drastically change, because then you start figuring things out about people and where their strengths are and weaknesses. But and the fact too that, you know, whenever you have this team, you all have to be aligned on the vision. Like it's not, one cannot be out of line. I mean, you have to, like, for it to be truly successful. And again, you're going to go through a bunch of people, right? I mean, I don't know how many, but it's not going to be perfect the first time. But ultimately, your ultimate goal is, you know, for everyone to have the same vision. You know, Apple created a vision that all of their employees, like, you know, truly love and admire and stuff. And Amazon, you know, SpaceX is a huge one where everyone is working on a vision, you know, and when that happens, things, you know, harmony. And it just really, I mean, I think that, but I mean, going back to the rocks, I mean, it's, you have to have goals. They have to be clear. You know, I don't know necessarily, you know, how specific you want to be, but, you know, just have something you're chasing and ask yourself every day if you did a little bit, you know, to get closer to those goals. Did you do something to help you get there today? You know, what do you need to do tomorrow if you didn't today, like to make up for it? I mean, just be like, also, like, your calendar is your own boss. When you're an entrepreneur, like, your calendar is your boss. Fill it up, have meetings, have calls, tour properties, look at deals, make offers, analyze properties, study, you know, get some education constantly, every day. I'm addicted to that, man. Like I'm addicted. If I'm not doing that, there's a problem.
That's good.
For real. Serious.
I believe you. I believe you, man. Fired up.
You should ask me if I'm not doing that, there's something bigger going on in my life.
You're in depression.
I guess. But.
Well, you know, we're getting to that hour and a half, so I don't want to be taking up too much of your time. So let's start wrapping up a little bit. What is something that maybe we haven't covered that you would like to make sure that we cover before we end?
I mean, I don't want to be too specific on, you know, real estate type or real estate in general. I mean, it's more, I think that, you know, first thing that comes to mind every time, you know, we hang out or we get together, or, you know, I think this podcast is super important for people to understand, you know, what allowed me and us to grow and get better is resourcefulness. I mean, we really figured things out. I mean, you know, look at you. You have a podcast now, and you know, you hated technology. I mean, I remember I was the one kind of like figuring a little bit of technology stuff out. And I mean, you have a podcast now. You have a bunch of listeners. I mean, you guys renovate 5 houses a month now. I mean, it's constant growth. But you know, I think the biggest key to that is, you know, you didn't let you know, the circumstances outside, you know, face you. You know, it was something that, you know, I'll figure it out if I need to. You know, hire a couple more contractors, and you know, because some screwed me over, you know, figure it out. If you know, need to file your tax return, you know, yourself, like, figure it out. I mean, do whatever it takes, but you know, figure it out. Your bookkeeping, figure it out. Your website, create your website, figure it out. Like, you know, it's a lot of people have too many excuses. I hate excuses. And when people don't like try, I remember also people would come to me, and you know, I remember also people would come to us and be like, How do I do this? Like, have you tried? Like, have you done everything you possibly could to try to figure that out before you come to me and ask me that question? And that just makes your mind develop, you know, this skill that I think you really need in order to be successful in this business and in anything, really. Is, you know, there's so many resources out there. What's that quote with Tony Robbins? I know you know it off the top, but the resourcefulness, you know, when people figure out that, you know, the best skill to have is, you know, resourcefulness, it's not so much like an actual skill. Like, I think that's where, you know, you really become successful. But I don't know, Tony, look it up, guys. Tony Robbins has an awesome quote. It's awesome. But I think that's a big key, bro. Do you agree?
1,000%.
Anything on that?
I mean, you know, growing up in this country as an immigrant, like, you had to be resourceful. I had no other option. You know what I mean? Like, you know, this whole thing of complaining, bitching and moaning and wanting the government to help you, that was never an option for us. So your only option is just to get resourceful. So even right now, when everybody's freaking out, and I get it, it's a tough time, and there's a lot of people that gotten hit. To me, it's like, all right, like, this is just another opportunity to become more resourceful. Like, first thing that we did was start tapping. That's why we started the Tips from the Pros, because I started reaching out to people that had been through this before, that understand what's going on, that still have their business, that's still growing, because I was like, hey, what are you guys doing? You know, what are you seeing? What's coming in the down the line? Because it's resourcefulness, right? It's just, I don't need to know all the answers. I just need to know the people that do know all the answers. Yeah. And that's what's going to make sure that my company keeps going, moving forward.
Yep.
So I completely agree with you.
Huh? Get started. Like, if you're going to wholesale houses, if you're going to flip houses, like, buy your first deal, figure it out. You'll get resourceful, you know, and you'll develop that skill and the trait and the muscle. But get involved. Like, I get so many people telling me, dude, I'm looking at so many deals. And what are you doing today? Oh, I'm analyzing deals. Like,
yeah,
I'm underwriting deals. Like, I mean, okay, but I feel like they're just overthinking it sometimes. And, you know, just figure it out and make it happen. Don't make excuses is what I'm trying to say. Like,
yeah,
I'm 24. You know, age was definitely, you know, a factor, you know, coming into the business, but I didn't let that stop me, you know?
24, you're a baby. You're a baby. But PJ did find the quote. It says, the defining factor is never resources, it's resourcefulness, by Tony Robbins. Sure.
There.
So, I mean, very true. So before we wrap up, before we end, what are some books that have defined you that you're like, man, I would not be here if it wasn't for this book? And I get it, 10X by Grant Cardone and Grant Cardone's memoirs. And I get it. You have a picture of him by your nightstand.
No, the book that taught Grant is the one I'm going to recommend. Think and Grow Rich. Study it, read it. I promise. There's so many basics in that book. And the first time around, I didn't understand it. I didn't know what the heck was going on. The language was super weird. You know, it gave me a headache, and I didn't believe in the book. But I kept it in my car. And now, I mean, I pick it up, you know, once a week and go through it, dive into a couple chapters. And I can learn something new from that book every time I read it, depending on the situation that I'm in, right? But, you know, that one is a huge one. Slight Edge was a big one. You know, and I mean, I think I'm not a big reader, to be honest. It's more of, I do a lot of audio tapes. I do a lot of, you know, looking at, you know, Jim Rohn, speak on YouTube and at a seminar in 1965 or something super old. And he's just playing in the background here in the office, and Tony Robbins is playing in the background. I mean, it's not only books, it's also audios, I think, help me a little bit better. But you know, those are the basics with those guys.
Very nice.
On Hill, Rich.
And after this, remember, you're going to go on this post and put the list of podcasts and everything, because people are definitely wanting to see where you learn, where you get your education from.
Okay, cool.
So, yeah, I mean,
feel free. Also, like, I mean, I'd love to hop on a call with anybody if, you know, anyone has any questions. You know, we just got to coordinate and
be careful with that. Where's the best place people can reach you? What? How do you like to be contacted? Is it email, social media? What's the best way?
Pretty much, you know, Instagram. I'm pretty active on Instagram. I do a lot of, you know, stories on, you know, what we're doing at the apartments that we own. You know, what's going on, the renovations and stuff like that. So highly recommend to follow me on Instagram. Send me a message. Facebook, pretty active. I mean, any social media platform really. And you know, you'll find out a way to contact me. I mean, if you really want to know, I mean, you'll be resourceful and you'll figure it out.
Exactly. But, very well said. So last question, what are you doing right now to stay focused in the middle of all this chaos and panic that's going on? What are you doing to not let it get to you, to not let it affect your focus, your drive, your motivation? What is it that you're implementing in order to achieve that?
My goals. I'm looking at my goals every day. It's my goals, what I want. I'm not going to let coronavirus stop me from getting where I want to go. I'm not going to let a stock market crash in 2008 stop me from where I want to go. Like, I'm focused on my goals, and that's why it's important to have these rocks, these 90-day goals that you can look at, and when you look at that, you'll know. You'll know what you need to do. Like, but just have it down, and a lot of, I mean, honestly, people don't understand really the strength that it does when you write your goals down. And you put them, you know, in the back, and they're on my screensaver in the back on my computer. Right. And so, and I have the VTO printed out. I mean, it's something you have to, you know, really rely on is your goals and yourself. Yeah. And I mean, I think that's really what drives me, and also self-motivation. You know, I figure out how to self-motivate myself. Because a huge quote, Andrew Carnegie, those who are unable to motivate themselves must be content with mediocrity, no matter how impressive their other talents are. So you could be super good at something else, but you know, you have to figure out how to self-motivate yourself, and that's what's going to get you through anything.
And how scary is that word mediocrity, right? Like, it's like, yeah. You just say and you're like, nope. Dude,
there's no cussing on your show, man.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you can say fuck, shit, whatever, but don't say those lame words. Yeah, I gotcha.
That gives me goosebumps. Makes me nervous.
Yeah. Well, Adrian, thank you very much for coming on the show. You've shared a wealth of knowledge. And I know people are going to get a ton of value out of everything you shared, because it comes from real experience. This is not regurgitated guru nonsense. Napkins clogging up your toilet comes from you having to deal with that, right? Yeah. Having to go there, firing your property managers, managing it yourself. That is all real life experience. And you shared that in spades, and it's been amazing. There's still so much more questions I really have, but we can't make this, you know, a 4-hour long podcast. You see, every time we hang out, it's for at least 5 hours.
We plan it for a quick, you know, lunch or something, and we end up, you know, closing the bar out next door.
No, definitely.
It's
definitely
good, though. I mean, they're high level conversations. You know, it's not just, we're not talking about, you know, Drake, and, you know, we're not talking about, it's multi-billion dollar conversation.
It's the company you keep that matters, right? It's the people that you spend that time with that definitely matters. And you want to make sure you're selfish and you're spending it with people that are going to elevate you and not bring you down.
100%.
Sir, real pleasure.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, John. Again, say hi to John Barr for me.
Will do. Lumberjack John.
Lumberjack John.
Appreciate right, you, brother. Matt. Thank you for coming.
All right, man. Okay, right, bye-bye.
Take it easy. Well, there you have it, guys. Another powerful episode. Adrian did amazing, and I hope you guys really take advantage of all the knowledge he shared. And he gave you a pretty much step-by-step process on everything. And I think it's more than enough for you to, if you really want to get into this, that you just get out there and you execute. Right? Because now that you have that roadmap from Adrian, you can get out there and execute on that roadmap. You can start digging in deeper on what do those little things mean? What does this look like? But he gave you that overview on how it is that he grew from nothing to how he has this business at just 24 years old. I mean, it's very impressive. And I hope that it came across very, very accurately that you need passion. If you don't have that passion and that drive, you're just not going to achieve. You're not going to last. You understand? And you see Adrian, that he started with, going through a lot of shit, and he stuck through it. And even now, there's still problems that he has to deal with, you know, with his property managers and contractors and everything. But he's still pushing through. He has that passion that keeps him there. So I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Remember, we try to bring this every week, and we bring you a local professional that's killing it in the business. So make sure you subscribe to our podcast and our Facebook page and everything, so you stay up to date. Share with your friends, anybody that you know is interested in multifamily. Adrian's contact is going to be put on here, like he said, on social media and everything. You can reach out to him, message him. He's a great guy. He's always there to help. If you want to partner with him, you know, just be cautious of his time. You understand? Like, if you really want to work with him, be sure that you're really willing to put in that work, so you're not wasting his time and his resources. And that goes with anybody that you want to partner with. So thank you all for watching, and I will catch you on the next one.